The Church of God, the Eternal, presents the 12th message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, September 7th, 2024.
Well, so far in this series that we've been covering on Habitat for God and Man, we've been looking at all of the critical infrastructure, if you will, that keeps human life intact and thriving upon this earth as God made it. And as you know, the intent of this series is to take a lot of things that you already know and has been taught as a part of God's truth in other ways, and yet to put in a little bit of a different focus. So to speak from the standpoint of the vulnerability of human beings, meaning creatures that absolutely depend upon environments and elements that are beyond our control in order to keep us alive, things that we easily take for granted upon this earth. So we've been going through and analyzing each one of the key elements to our requirements for sustaining human life upon this earth, and then showing the spiritual dimension, the counterpart which God always has in everything that he's created physically. There's a spiritual counterpart which teaches us even something more important in the realm that matters for the ultimate fulfillment of our purpose as human beings to be born into the family of God. So far we've examined basic elements that human beings need for physical existence. We've covered, you know, air and atmosphere, water, food, climate, clothing, shelter, gravity, cleanliness. Now we get into the details kind of maintenance for these human bodies to keep them alive and functioning and thriving the way they could. So we've talked about cleanliness. Last time we talked about the requirement for sleep. Why did God require that we sleep? Same thing he did for, you know, a lot of the animals upon this planet who also sleep. So an interesting, I think it's a reminder, the fact that we are not God, that we, because God doesn't sleep, he has immortal life and he has power, and he never has to rest, we do. So it certainly reminds us of our vulnerability, the fact that we sleep away, if you will, like one third of our existence. In our lives. But anyway, so we've got another one, and I'm getting close to the end of the items that I want to cover in this series. This is message number 12 in the overall series. All good things do come to an end. Some of you will be glad for moving on. But today we're going to talk about another requirement for maintenance of these physical bodies as God designed it and required it. And it's one of those that's much more in your control and my control than necessary others, like sleep, air, you know, the need to eat food. One of the other elements now that you absolutely and I absolutely are required to think about and to manage and to take in consideration to have health and stamina in this physical existence is movement. Because our human bodies were designed by a creator to need to move. So we're going to talk about exercise today. We are going to talk about exercise. Human bodies are made by God to require movement. If we are static, then we degrade. So God gave us certain capabilities physically, strength and power, and the capacity for work and accomplishment. But if we don't do certain maintenance on our own, then we lose that power. So we're not talking about just the changes that happen as we get older, as we get weaker, and we'll talk about that in passing. We can't not talk about that in the course of talking about the difference in exercise regimes and the way you think about exercising and taking care of your bodies when you're younger versus you're older. That comes into it. But we are talking about even the maximum requirement at your peak physically and what is required in order for your bodies to work the very best. So let's start in 1 Timothy 4, verse 8. It's one of the few, there's not a whole lot of texts in the Bible that refer directly to physical exercise. But it's certainly covered and implied in principle in a lot of different areas, which we will certainly include today. But 1 Timothy 4, verse 8, and this would be the one that some people would say, well, says the opposite of the need for exercise, because 1 Timothy 4, 8 says, for bodily exercise profits little. So exercise profits little. Don't need to mess with that. Forget about all of this stuff that you hear from doctors and physical trainers and all the ones who'll tell you that exercise is important, because the Bible says all that time and energy with either going to the gym or having your own training program or whatever else is a waste of time, because bodily exercise profits little. But it's really a poor translation and from the old King James, and what it really means is bodily exercise profits for a little time. That's really what's being communicated. Bodily exercise only profits for a short season, in essence. Because physical exercise is being compared now by the Apostle Paul to something by comparison which is more important. Bodily exercise profits only for a little time, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. So right out of the box, you're seeing a comparison between the physical and the spiritual, as Mr. Raymond Cole would say, the type and the antitype. And we're going to get to that, but I want to focus on the type, the physical aspects first, and then we'll come back. Actually, by the end of the sermon, we're going to come back and look at an expanded passage of 1 Timothy 4. But I'm just giving you this element to say bodily exercise does profit. It's only temporary, and you know that if you have ever been in shape. How long does it last if you stop exercising? It is so easy to lose it, isn't it? Yeah, and that's frustrating. So you can work really, really hard, and you can condition your body, and you can, you know, be at your peak strength and stamina and energy level, and as soon as you let off, as soon as you start to slack, then you start to lose that capability at the same level. And that can be frustrating and demoralizing, and another reason why it can be really hard for us to maintain the practice of exercise as a part of our daily living. But it does profit for a little time, and I guarantee you, in principle, it is absolutely required in order to have peak power and capacity while you are on this earth. Exercise really needs to be something that you consider and apply. As long as we are physical, physical exercise is necessary as a requirement of taking care of these temples. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 6:19, because this is where one of those several commands are given in the taking care of these bodies. 1 Corinthians 6, beginning in verse 19. What? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you? So we are talking physical bodies in which the mind of God resides for those who are called and converted and baptized, and you receive a down payment of the Spirit. But it is your physical body and your physical mind in which the mind of God resides. And it is now the mind of God in you physically, which gives you capacity to accomplish something on this earth while you're here and while you're breathing. But it is both physical as well as spiritual. Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own? A confirmation of the fact that it is really not a prerogative that God gives to you and to me to neglect the care and maintenance of these bodies. Now, we can do it, and we often do, neglect our responsibilities to take care of our bodies. And of course, one of the main ways we do that is by eating polluted foods. And we've already talked about the requirements for eating to feed these bodies to give us maximum health. But this element of exercise is another one, not as important by comparison to food. The fuel you put in your body or the poison you put in your body is probably going to affect you more immediately and more dramatically sooner, but ultimately this issue of exercise or a lack of exercise will take its toll. And we as physical human beings will pay the price for a sedentary lifestyle. Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own? Meaning God still maintains ownership of our bodies. He does not relinquish that. And so in that regard, we are given a charge as human beings, and especially the called of God, who are supposed to know better than the people in the world. Now we're supposed to treat these physical temples, as they are called, as a responsibility and take care of them. Verse 20, for you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit. So both. So there's a whole lot of people who would like to say, well, you know, the physical is not as important. It's about the spiritual. Yeah, by comparison, the spiritual is much more important. But what we see here is that the physical goes hand in hand. And somebody who tries to separate them completely to say, I'm just focusing on putting on the mind of God and walking in the footsteps spiritually of following God, but the physical's not important. Well, if you take that tack, you're missing the point. Because in essence, one of the proofs of our commitment to putting on the mind of God, the invisible aspect of being converted, is manifested in how we treat and how we maintain these physical bodies. So they are both involved. Therefore, glorify God in your body, that means physically, and in your spirit. So he's saying you need to do the physical as well as the spiritual. Don't do one without the other, which are God's. There's your possession, your sense of ownership by God. He's saying this is still a temporary charge I have given to each one of you to manage on my behalf. And the way you and I do that is telling God a lot about, one, our acceptance of the truth concerning commandments, physically and spiritually, and our commitment literally to learning to do better. So don't ever think that the physical doesn't matter. Don't ever think that the physical is all that matters. It weighs less by comparison to the spiritual, but in reality, using self-discipline and control in order to take care of our physical bodies is going hand in hand with to the extent in which we are putting on the spiritual aspects required. We'll talk about that more at the end of the message. I want to give you a citation from the Good News Magazine, August 1966. This was an article entitled, Physical Exercise Does Profit. And I'm just going to read one excerpt from it, but here it says, quote, what will proper exercise do for you? There are many physical, mental, emotional, and even spiritual benefits which can be derived from good exercise. Proper exercise is one of the keys to vibrant and radiant health. And it's, if you look at that booklet, Seven Keys to Radiant Health, you're going to find that exercise is one of them. I didn't choose to cite from it, but it's there. And unless a person is physically strong and alert, his mental, emotional, and spiritual condition will tend to be weak, lacking in drive, vigor, and balance. Physically, however, exercise of the muscles will bring many benefits. It will help firm up flab, result in a stronger and steadier heartbeat, improve circulation throughout the body, and cause breathing to deepen. It will increase strength, endurance, and coordination. It will also help make the joints more flexible, reduce minor aches, pain, stiffness, and soreness, and correct some posture defects. Exercise will also contribute to a better appearance and increase the efficient use of energy in physical and mental tasks. It helps a person to relax and helps reduce tension and fatigue. In general, it aids in controlling weight, helps stave off diseases, and prolongs a person's active, useful years, unquote. Okay, that was a mouthful. And guess what? There was nothing controversial in that because it's absolutely supported by just about every, you know, human, medical, article or piece of advice that you're going to get. So this really should not be controversial in any way. In essence, what we're talking about here are things which have been proved and can be proved by people who have no personal relationship with God. By virtue of living in this world, these principles have all been certified. in comparison to ones who practice a sedentary lifestyle versus those who literally have an active lifestyle, including moving the body. There is a difference in the quality of health and of life. This article, that's the only citation I'm going to give you, but this article actually describes, you know, exercise, warm-up, conditioning, circulatory, cardiovascular activities. It covers principles like, what if you're fully or partially disabled? You know, that's because, obviously, if you have physical limitations, you can't go run a marathon. You can't, you know, do all this high exertion. But does that mean you can't do anything? No. No matter what your current physical condition is, even limited by disability or age restrictions, you can move. You can move your body to some extent, and God wants you, and you need to move to the extent that you are able to do it. We need to actually to move, because it's a part of literally keeping intact the very functions that you already have, and the less that you use them, the more you're going to lose them. It's just a fact. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm a poster child for this. I struggle myself with committing enough time and energy to it, and I do a certain amount of exercise during the week. With the help of my wife, I do more than I probably would otherwise. And it gets harder as you get older. I'm a testament to that. It's harder to maintain, and there have to be changes. Because one of the other weaknesses that we have is allowing this idea in mind, well, I used to be able to lift this much weight in the gym, and I used to be able to run, you know, at this pace, and I used to be able to do this and used to be able to do that. And then if you can't do that anymore, it becomes discouraging. And then there's a tendency just not to do anything. Wisdom requires us to make exercise a normal habit in our lives. Now, it's harder for us that are office workers, and that's me. There's a strong, sedentary element to my existence, and I admit it. And those of you that actually have physical jobs, my dad was not big into this idea. My dad never exercised. Now, and when he got older, I think, he could have done better to do certain things which he didn't do. But he worked hard a lot of his life, and he got his exercise through his occupation and through other activities and stuff. And I know following him around as a little kid and working with him, I would get tired out, whether it's digging fence posts or whether it's doing whatever else. And so there was exertion in a lot of areas. In these days, a lot more of us don't work physically that way day to day. In the trade, some do, but a lot do not. And if you don't, then you got to take an extra effort in order to make the movement of your body something that you consciously do and plan for. Otherwise, there is a price to be paid. That's the point of it. There is a price to be paid if you don't move. The cardiovascular aspect of it, aerobic exercise to the extent that, that you can handle it, certainly is very, very beneficial. So even if you're fully or partially disabled, you're not forgiven the need to move. Even if you're just doing certain isometric exercises from a stated or a lying position, there are things you can do to exercise the muscles that do work and that you are in control of. So it's still something that we should take into consideration. Also, exercising regularly, making it a habit, and that can be really hard. Avoid what I call the New Year's resolution trap. This is the one, I need to start an exercise routine. Okay, people like, in the world who New Year's resolution, and then they're going to do it. So the gym, the use of the gym memberships and all that, and the gyms fill up right after January the 1st. And then within a short few weeks, the gym's empty out again. Why? Because people give up on their new resolution. And I remember back when I was young and had a gym membership, and I used to work out 6 days a week, and I remember that, January was the worst, because the gyms would fill up with all of these short timers, and I couldn't wait for like February to come, because then it would get back to normal, and then only the serious people were there. So that's a tendency that is a pitfall that is very, very common. And one of the solutions to that is don't bite off more than you can chew. Don't, you know, if you're trying to improve the amount of activity, exercise that you're incorporating into your routine, make it something manageable that you can actually do. And you can, you know, and if you can increase it over time, fine. But doing something is better than doing nothing. That's the point. And so how many I have seen, you know, have this like, well, oh, I'm older now and I need to exercise. Well, when I was 25, I used to be able to do this. So now I'm going to try and do that again. What I'm going to do is get hurt, you know, and then I'm going to give up on it. You know, so it's again, it's going from one ditch to the other. I'm doing nothing and now I'm going to try and act like I'm young again, 30, 40 years ago. When what I need to do now is take on amount of movement and activity under the guise of exercise, which is reasonable for my age and my physical ability. And so the trick is to incorporate something that you can maintain, that is reasonable to actually do and not to give up on. And then the motivation and the determination in order to use discipline to keep going with it. But don't bite off more than you can chew, or I guarantee you, it's just going to be a flash in the pan. The other side, the other ditch on that, don't let, and then this 1966 article mentions it, don't let physical fitness become an idol, because that's the other possibility that can occur. And there are people literally who then have made it an idol, and I mean, they may not have fulfillment in a lot of other parts of their lives, and so, you know, getting physically fit, bodybuilding, sculpting, running, whatever it can become an obsession, obviously, then to excess on the other side of the scale. So when I was in my 20s and before I got married, I was working out 6 days a week in the gym. And that was kind of one of the things I did. So I understand that mentality of living to go to the gym. Lots of things change in our lives. But I think I was absolutely not balanced back then. And then I have a tendency not to be balanced on the other side, you know, when I'm in my 60s. So again, the point is to try and find something that is wise, that recognizes the reality of where you stand physically, what's within your capability, and what really makes sense in order to take care of the body that you have. As a steward, as we've already seen, because you're God's property, and you and I are supposed to take care of these physical temples. And it is absolutely an obligation. The other thing the article points out is weight control. I'm not saying that exercise is the solution. A lot of it has to do with diet and the amount that we eat and everything else. But exercise can certainly be a factor which influences your ability and the amount of calories that you burn. But if you think you're going to solve your weight problem just by working out more, you're probably going to fail. But I guarantee you, if you're also working on what you're eating and how much you're eating in combination with a reasonable exercise regime, then you put all those pieces together and you've got a higher opportunity to actually succeed with it. Let me read you an excerpt from a Worldly article. This is from, you know, there's so many out there, and I was just trying to pull up something that was synoptic, kind of like the 1966 Good News article. Just from a worldly standpoint, here's something from a website, www.heart.org. I figured that was probably a good one to use. And an article entitled, "Why is Physical Activity So Important for Health and Well-Being?" Again, a lot of common sense things, but let's just read through it. This article says, quote, "We know that staying active is one of the best ways to keep our bodies healthy. But did you know it can also improve your overall well-being and quality of life? Here are just a few ways physical activity can help you feel better, look better, and live better. It's a natural mood lifter. Regular physical activity can relieve stress, anxiety, depression, and anger. You know that feel-good sensation you get after doing something physical? Think of it as a happy pill with no side effects. Most people notice they feel better over time as physical activity becomes a regular part of their lives. Not if you just go from doing nothing and all of a sudden you work out and you make yourself totally sore and then you're all in pain. Oh, I can't move. My muscles are complaining. That doesn't feel good at all. So the trick really is making it a habit. So you condition yourself to whatever level of activity that you're practicing. The article goes on to say, it keeps you physically fit and able. Without regular activity, your body slowly loses its strength, stamina, and ability to function properly. I'll stop there and say, yeah, they don't acknowledge a creator God who made our bodies, but this is the way the one true creator actually made it to work. You will lose the capability that you have if you don't move your body. Most people, it says that without regular activity, your body slowly loses strength, stamina, and ability to function properly. It's like the old saying, you don't stop moving from growing old, you grow old from stopping moving. Exercise increases muscle strength, which in turn increases your ability to do other physical activities. It helps keep the doctor away. It says, stand up when you eat your apple a day. I thought that's interesting. I like sitting down. I don't like standing up. But, okay, this is a part of things that we need. Stand up, it says, when you eat your apple a day. Too much sitting and other sedentary activities can increase your risk of heart disease and stroke. Studies show that adults who watch more than 2 hours of television a day can have a higher risk of death from cardiovascular disease. Being more active may help you, one, lower your blood pressure, boost your level of good cholesterol, improve blood flow and circulation, keep your weight under control, prevent bone loss that can lead to osteoporosis. This can add up to fewer medical expenses, interventions, medications later in life. So they get it from a physical standpoint. The difference between a higher quality of life physically through a practice of moving, exercising, in whatever capacity that is, compared to doing nothing physically. The article says it's true, 70 is the new 60, but only if you're healthy. Physical activity may help you live longer, and those extra years are generally healthier years. Staying active helps delay or prevent chronic illnesses and diseases associated with aging. So active adults maintain their quality of life and independence longer as they age. It says some other benefits you may get with regular physical activity helps you quit smoking and stay tobacco free, again, from a worldly standpoint, boost your energy level so you can get more done, helps you manage stress and tension, promotes a positive attitude and outlook, helps you fall asleep faster and sleep more soundly, improves your self-image and self-confidence, helps you spend more time outdoors, end quote. Okay, so absolutely consistent with that which was taught to the church in the radio church days, because this is all much more easily certified even from just physical experience. All right, so there should be nothing controversial here whatsoever. It's just a matter of us then being wise about, one, taking seriously the need for our bodies to move, and then adapting a program to accomplish that for you, and not some pie in the sky, you know, program that you're not going to do or is not good for you based upon where you are physically or age-wise. Another Bible text here, 3 John. 3 John verse 2. 3 John verse 2 says, "Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prosper." So in case you think he's only talking spiritually, you know, spiritual health, no, because the comparison between the spiritual and the physical is made here. Be in health even as thy soul prospers. So with the soul, he's talking about the mind, and especially a converted mind with the power of the Holy Spirit helping to develop now a godly orientation in respect for the commandments and habits now that actually demonstrate a godly orientation, but also in concert with physical health. And again, this points right back to one of the early teachings that we learned through God's church in the 20th century under Mr. Herbert Armstrong. And he was provocative, I think, even in the world in his time, when he said, it is not normal to be ill. Sickness is not, well, it's normal for human beings by what they experience. But what the reason they experience health and disability, by and large, is because of broken laws. The natural state as God intended it is for us to experience health. But that requires us to obey the laws, physically and spiritually. So the reason sickness and disability and all manner of physical and mental problems exist in large part, well, in every part, is because of the violation of God's laws, either the physical ones and or the invisible ones, the spiritual ones. So if you acknowledge from the beginning that living with disability and illness is not the way it's supposed to be and involves broken laws some way, somehow, either because your ancestors passed down defective genes in part, and we are getting weaker, not stronger, from our ancestors 6,000 years ago, but also then what we do to our bodies in our own lifetimes. But illness and disability and a loss of the quality of life comes always from broken laws. So, we've talked about the food, we've talked about everything else. The exercise is a necessary element that we must take into consideration as well. It is a requirement in the way that God requires us to take care of ourselves. So we already discussed a few sermons back the need, as God created it in this human habitat on the earth, for the law of gravity, and did a whole sermon on gravity. And it goes somewhat hand in hand with this issue of exercise, because it takes the force of gravity in order to give your body something to push against. So they go hand in hand, but I want to read an excerpt from another article. This is actually written from a summary from a NASA astronaut. The need to exercise is related to this issue of our physical habitat on this earth, including gravitational force, since when you exercise, what you're doing is pushing against the force of gravity. So I could have, covered them at the same time, and I didn't. I don't want to step over all of that material, but I do want to link it up, because this is another one of those things that astronauts have to take in consideration when they're living, especially in an extended period of time, in a microgravity environment. They don't call it a zero gravity. In low Earth orbit, they call it a microgravity environment because there's a small amount left. But the issue there, and so the scientists understand the physical ramifications for the loss of the force of gravity as it affects our bodies. And we talked about that. A lot of the invisible things that happen inside the body, the organs, the immune system, the eyes. So those are not things that we exercise. Those are things that are affected by the absence of gravity, and our bodies were made by God to thrive under the gravity that exists upon this earth right now. But then when we move into the issue of your responsibility and my responsibility to exercise and condition these bodies, gravity now comes into play. Only now it's something you and I control, not something that just happens to us. But from the standpoint, here's an article. This was actually a CNN health article from May 2016, entitled "Our Bodies in Space, Zero Gravity Weighs Heavy on Your Health." And this was basically a summary of experiences from astronaut Mike Hopkins. And here's his experience. Long-term risks is a subheading in this article. And it says, Hopkins also had to worry about the long-term effects on his body, such as the weakening and loss of bones and atrophying muscles. In space, without gravity, bones lose more than 1% of minerals and density per month. Astronauts also experience blood volume loss, weakened immune systems, and cardiovascular deconditioning, since floating takes little effort and the heart doesn't have to work as hard to pump blood through your body, according to Human Research Program Deputy Chief Scientist Jennifer A. Fogarty. As soon as they overcome motion sickness, NASA wants its astronauts to start working out. meaning they blast up there, they're on the International Space Station, and it takes some time to acclimate, but then very quickly they want them to start exercising, and for a reason. They say it is also good for their sensory motor systems if their feet are striking the surface of something, like running on a treadmill, Fogarty said. The three exercise machines, and they're referring to these that are literally on the space station, and these astronauts literally include hours of physical exercise in a program while they're in that environment. Three exercise machines mimic a treadmill, a stationary bike, and a multi-purpose weight machine. They're meant to stimulate the lower body from running to squats and deadlifts, as the largest percent of bone loss occurs in the pelvis and femurs. Astronauts use the machines for 2 hours a day to compensate for the other 22 hours in which they aren't experiencing physical activity. So in a zero gravity environment, even if you want to work out, the fact that you're floating around, gravity is not forcing you to push against it. Even, you know, you stand up out of your chair on Earth, you're exercising. Not so when you're in low Earth orbit. So astronauts use the machines for 2 hours a day to compensate for the other 22 hours in which they aren't experiencing physical activity. In addition to counteracting bone loss and atrophying muscles, exercise provides a change of pace and mental release, even if they have to bungee themselves to the treadmill to run in microgravity. I thought was interesting. So if you've ever seen any videos, and I've got stuff out there that shows, these have to be pretty complex machines, because they literally have to include the apparatus to mimic the force of gravity in order to push against, to try to exercise the body. So it's another confirmation. This man is having to overcome the extra curses that are involved with living and existing outside the realm where God intended us to thrive. So as soon as man gets off the surface of the earth, now you've just put yourself in a curse situation, because our bodies were designed by a creator to thrive with the amount of gravity that we have right here on the earth. As soon as you get out of that, now you've put yourself in danger. So what man is trying to do is put band-aids on that by creating these artificial replacements for gravity, including the need for these astronauts, especially the ones that are up there for months and sometimes over a year, to try to compensate for the loss of the natural movement that they have, which is absolutely integral for human health. So the scientists, you know, human scientists get this stuff. And it's also been proven out, you know, through their experience. More spiritual principles. Proverbs 24, verse 5. Doesn't refer specifically to physical exercise, but it's implied in some of these principles. Proverbs 24, verse 5 says, "A wise man is strong." Oh, yeah, you can spiritualize everything. I get it. Well, strong in mind, you know, we're supposed to be godly people. That's the strength we're talking about. Yeah, that's the more important part. We're going to get to that soon. But do not diminish or think that the physical is not important. A wise man is strong. Yea, a man of knowledge increases strength. You cannot exclude strength from a physical standpoint. And even as the articles, the 1966 Good News article and these others, your level of physical activity will inform, if I can use the term, your mental state as well. That does have an impact upon your state of mind and the way that you feel. And God made it that way. So taking care of your mind also requires that you take care of your body as much as you are able to do so. Proverbs 31, verse 17, this idea of strength. I'm not talking about, you know, becoming, you know, some super weightlifter or, you know, bodybuilder. No, we're talking about strength, and especially age-appropriate strength. And it does change. I quit using heavy weights when I was in my early 40s. That was at the point where I figured out I am much more likely to injure myself trying to work out like when I was 25. And by the time I got to my early 40s, I made the decision for myself, I don't think that makes sense anymore. And so I changed the way that I thought about exercise and went more to, you know, non-exterior weights and just using body weight workout. Wish I was more consistent about that. Need to be. So let's all put that on our list to get better with that. But it does change. And so wisdom is exercising these bodies, using a strength program which is appropriate for your age and your ability. But the point is, move your bodies. Make them exercise. Proverb 31, she girds her loins with strength. We're talking about the Proverb 31 woman, the ideal wife, the orientation of things that symbolically we're talking about the church. It applies to us all because that's what the Proverb 31 wife is supposed to reflect, the church. But physically, it's talking about important things in the way that this woman, this wife, this mother, this head of household, in that regard, from a physical home manager, the way she conducts herself. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. I'm not saying she's got a set of dumbbells. No, she's got plenty of work to do. Ways to exercise and to accomplish these physical things and to be strong physically, that doesn't mean she's going to the gym. And strengthens her arms. Now, the New Living Translation says, she is energetic and strong, a hard worker. And I think that's a reasonable paraphrase of what God is really inspiring here through Solomon. She is energetic and strong, a hard worker. So this is someone who's moving. There's exercise implied in the fact that she's moving rather than being sedentary. Physical conditioning is used in the Bible as a symbol for our spiritual work. So don't just say, you know, the physical's not important because he's really talking about the spiritual. No, he's using the physical, which is important, also to teach us something about the spirit. Isaiah 40, verse 28. Isaiah 40, beginning in verse 28. Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the eternal, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary? So again, and I've given you this text before, but it's comparing the state of God in his realm, in his habitat, to ours. For comparison, we find out God doesn't need to exercise because he doesn't have a body like you and I do that it's going to atrophy without movement. His is perfect and strong and resilient forever, even if he just sat on the couch by comparison. And God doesn't, because God works. But as far as the makeup materially of the spirit realm and in the God family in particular, as opposed to you and me as human beings, the creator of the ends of the earth faints not, neither is weary. He never gets tired. There is no searching of his understanding. Verse 29, he gives power to the faint. So one of the things he gives to us as weak, fallible, vulnerable human beings, it says he gives power. Well, yeah, he's talking about power of mind. Well, again, your existence as a human creature on this earth while you breathe, he intended for you and I to enjoy physical health and a quality of life, not to exist in illness and disability. And many of us do. And if so, and God hasn't chosen to remove that, then he wants us to make the best of that for the purpose of the spiritual development, but not to forsake the physical obligation of what it takes to take care of these temples. And so one of the things he promises, it says he gives power to the faint. So I can sit in my easy chair and say, God, please give me good cardiovascular conditioning and strong muscles. It doesn't work that way, because he's given us the ability to do it, the responsibility to do it. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases strength. Yes, more importantly, he's talking about, you know, the spiritual fulfillment of mind and and walking in the footsteps of Jesus Christ and learning to trust in faith and in confidence and all. Yes, but what I'm telling you is you cannot dismiss the physical aspect of this. They go hand in hand. To them that have no might, he increases strength. Verse 30, even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. Yes, physically speaking, we all start off comparatively strong when we're young. By nature, our bodies are more powerful and they have more flexibility. And then over time, what happens? We get weaker, we lose those capacities, we go downhill. As Mr. Raymond Cole used to say, God created these bodies to be like a clock, slowly winding down through the years of our life. Which means even if you perfectly take care of your body by what you eat, by exercising and doing all of these other things, the seven principles of radiant health, you're still going to get weaker because God made it that way. And so here, this principle is also sowing. So humanly, and we're going to see another text, you know, that talks about the power of young people is in the strength of their body. And we have these things naturally and we take them for granted, and most of us do. Most of us who are older did. We miss them once we don't have them anymore. But God made it that way so that we are like a fading flower. We are slowly then deteriorating according to the way God made these bodies to work. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Eternal shall renew their strength. So yes, you're talking about the spiritual principle, which is most important, but it's using strength and power physically, humanly, by comparison. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. The spiritual is most important. That's what it's really all about. But taking care of these bodies within the limits of what God has given us is an integral part. If I can keep saying that over and over again, to make the principle stick. Hebrews 12, verse 1, again, I'm showing that God uses the physical and conditioning physical as a metaphor for the things that we're supposed to be doing spiritually. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. Hebrews 12, verse 1 says, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Now, this is absolutely a spiritual command, and yet he's using the symbolism of physical activity, is he not? You know, the Apostle Paul did this a number of times. I'm not going to turn to all those like in 1 Corinthians, where he talked about running a race. So there's a number of references to this, which means this idea of running can't be wrong. There are people who overdo it. They actually abuse their bodies and probably wear them down prematurely. But the idea, and I still run, but I'm a 62-year-old, so I run differently, more conservatively than I used to. But my knees are good. I don't feel pain when I do it. If I ever started to, I would certainly change that. But, you know, some can't run because, you know, the pounding on their skeleton and different things or whatever and disabilities, you pay a serious physical price. As long as I don't, I get value out of it. So I'm going to try and keep that up. But I'm telling you that when you start earlier in your life with an exercise regime, it is so much easier to maintain it when you get older. If you've been sedentary most of your life and then you get older and now you're really feeling the effects of age and inactivity, and now you're going to try to start for the first time an exercise program, you're really having an uphill battle. The ones who do much better by comparison are the ones who start a discipline orientation to exercise when they're younger. And even as you modify that when you get older, but now your body still has the habit of movement. And it's more likely that you're going to preserve more of your physical function. You're going to get weaker, but you're going to preserve more of your physical ability and your function longer if you have already the habit of moving. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I certainly am trying to take seriously for myself as it gets harder in my mind to make me want to do it. But I know I need to. And I have the habit from the past, which means hopefully then I can parlay that into habits, you know, in my older years, however long I've got left, to have a higher quality of life than I would otherwise. I am, just to give you a personal historical example that comes to my mind, back in the years when my family lived in northern Wisconsin and I was a member of the National Ski Patrol, and I would ski twice a week, usually 10 hours a week, on duty. And Wednesday nights, typically, I would go up after, go from the office, throw on my gear, go up to the hill, and ski till 10 p.m. Well, there was an old veteran ski patroller, and he was 70 years old. And he had this habit, just personally, of an exercise regime that he would do. And some of us younger guys decided we were going to copy him. Well, he would start at the bottom of the hill next to the lodge. And this was a small hill, so it was only like 650 feet of vertical. So a relatively small ski hill, but 650 feet of elevation to the top. And he would hike it on his skis. So forget the chairlift. I'm not saying every single run, but to get his evening started, his workout regime, he would put on his gear and put on his skis, and then he would hike on his skis up to the top. Well, if this 70-year-old guy can do it, certainly we can do it. Uh-huh. And some of us were in pretty good physical shape from doing other things like lifting weights and whatever. He would bury us every single time and put us in the shade. And I remember, and we did it. It was good for us, but it was also very humbling. And we would try to follow him, and he would typically make it to the top at least 30 to 45 minutes ahead of us. I mean, so we used, and he used, and he taught us kind of how to do it, because you really don't learn how to hike up a hill on skis, but you do it. You sidestep up, sidestep the other side, give your muscles a rest, take your skis off and toe pick up part of the way, put your skis back on, you know, herringbone up, and change in order to get up to the top. Absolutely exhausted when we get to the top, and he'd be sitting in the warming shed up there laughing at us. But there's an example of someone. Why was he able to do that at 70 years old? Because he didn't just start an exercise program, you know, when he was 60 or 65. He had been doing this a long time. And the repetition now of all that he had learned and achieved when he was younger, he maintained a muscle memory and an ability, cardiovascular wise and everything else, to be able to do a whole lot more than a lot of young people were able to do because of his habit of actually exercising in that way. So it's one of those examples that I've always remembered because it impacted me personally about the idea of what is possible, assuming you don't have some other physical limitation or disease or, you know, something that happens to you. But in absence of those things, it is possible then to create a good habit, which is going to do you well if you are blessed enough to live longer and to have a higher quality of life. Principles of exercise goes hand in hand with also being a worker. And I could have turned this into, you know, work versus lazy, but let's just, you know, one reference to this, Proverbs 12, verse 24. Proverbs 12, beginning in verse 24. I'm going to read this from the New Living Translation, or paraphrase. Proverbs 12, 24 says, "Work hard and become a leader. Be lazy and become a slave." So this idea of exercising, of moving, very often goes hand in hand with inclination to be a worker, or, you know, to err instead on the other side of being slothful. Verse 27 says, "Lazy people don't even cook the game that they catch, but the diligent make use of everything they find." So there is an industrious element or orientation. And if you are one that lacks that by nature, or when you were a child were not encouraged to develop it, and that's, I think, an increasing reality of youth today whose parents wanted to give them every advantage so they don't have to suffer the way that they suffered. And yet one of the things that younger generations in the modern world lose is the ability to learn to work when they are young. But it does go hand in hand with self-discipline, which is manifested in likewise the ability to create a habit of moving your body, of exercising and whatever, and actually doing things rather than sitting all the time. The inward exercise of mind is more important by comparison, and we've alluded to it all the way through it. But let's now focus upon that. Proverbs 20, verse 29. Proverbs 20:29, a comparison being made physical versus spiritual again. Here we read, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the beauty of old men is the gray head." And what's showed here is that there's a natural strength and power and vitality when you're young. And of course, that's we focus on what we can do and our ability to run and to jump and to do all these things. And when we get older, we lose that, which means hopefully we're fulfilled more so by other things. And we should if we've been increasing in wisdom over our lives, right? That's the way it's supposed to work. And so the greatest, if you live to old age, the greatest strength you should possess is not the physical anymore, but it's the knowledge and the wisdom you have accumulated, which you now are able to share with younger generations, if you know how to do it in a wise way, and if there are ones who are willing to learn from you. But that's the way God intended it to work. You will naturally lose physical power, no matter how diligent you've been about exercising. But hopefully, when you're older, you've gained wisdom and new skills then that you can pass on to those who have not yet achieved that. Beauty of old men is the gray head, and that's referring to the wisdom, not just the color of the hair. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16. 2 Corinthians 4, 16. "For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish." And so here you're talking about a Greek word which is in a progressive state of decline, which is absolutely what we are as God made us physically. "Though our outward man perish or slowly deteriorate, yet the inward man is renewed day by day." So yes, you will get weaker, even if you perfectly take care of your physical body. You will get weaker. That is an absolute reality, which means it's a silly, silly, foolish thing to try and recapture your youth. You're just going to hurt yourself if you try and act like you were, you know, when you were 25. A certain amount of wisdom says, okay, I know. I can't keep up with the young bucks anymore. I got to recognize where I really am physically. And that's a part of, should be the wisdom of age, if we have it. Our outward man perishes or gets weaker, and yet the inward man is renewed day by day. Yes, that's what's really important. By comparison, it's putting on more of the mind of God, His wisdom, so that even as we decline in our last days in the flesh, yet we should be at the height then of our spiritual accomplishment. Jeremiah 9, verse 24. Jeremiah 9, verse 24 says, "But let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me." As opposed to glorying what? In physical accomplishments, ability, power. "Let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the eternal, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness." So there's exercise going on here. But what kind of exercise is it? Now we're not talking about physical exertion for the strengthening of muscles and lungs and all of these things. Now we're talking about a different kind of exercise. It's still a flexing. It's still a work. It's still an exertion. But to achieve what? Not temporary physical things at all. That I am the eternal, he says, which exercise, what does God exercise? Loving kindness, judgment, meaning good judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Eternal. Ultimately, that's what really matters. It's not the physical, which is going to go away here today and gone tomorrow. This shows an exertion still, even when physically you become weak and unable to do things physically like you used to be able to do it, there's still a requirement for you and I to exert, to apply exertion, effort, power. And so in mind, every single one of us then should have that capability. Acts 24, verse 16. Acts 24, verse 16 says, "And herein do I exercise." And it literally is a Greek word that means to train, to strive, yes, and to exercise. They're all synonyms. "Herein do I exercise myself to have always," what? "A conscience void of offense toward God and toward men." So now we are talking about an exercise program, not of the body for physical benefits, but of the mind in controlling how we think in our relationship with God and how we behave even to other people in our life, both within and out of the church. The example that we set, either we are a light for the way of God or we are not. So that is an exercise program as well. In fact, that's the most important exercise program you'll ever engage in, otherwise known as being converted. Your spiritual conversion is an exercise regime. My point is, however, for those who want to think, well, I'm just going to focus on the spiritual because that's the only thing God cares about, to the exclusion of taking care of the physical temple that you have now, that's not going to fly. And 10:1 says, if you're cutting corners on taking care of your body physically, you're probably also cutting corners in the invisible things of spiritual development that God wants us to be doing. The one is going to be a reflection of the other. I'm not talking about being like a Pharisee. Oh, I'm going to be the poster child for physical exercise and diet and blah, 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 blah. To the exclusion of the exercise program that's most important about changing your mind, thinking differently, laying down your idols, and picking up instead the principles of God, which do not come naturally to you and me. Laying down the weight of your own ideas and your concepts and picking up the ideas of God, that's exertion like you'll never experience. And you won't, and I won't be able to do it except for the power of God's Holy Spirit, basically giving us a spot. So there's the requirement spiritually, more important by far than anything we do physical. But what I'm emphasizing is they go hand in hand. The extent to which we rein in ourselves and bring them, our bodies, into subjection to take care of them as we should is also a part of our ability to develop the concepts of spiritually growing and putting on the mind of Jesus Christ little by little each day. All right, in closing, back to 1 Timothy 4, where we started. Now we're going to start in verse 6 and read through verse 9, a bigger principle in concept here. 1 Timothy 4, beginning in verse 6, "If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things," and now this is, Paul is writing this to the young evangelist Timothy, explaining to Timothy how he should think about his responsibility as a local minister, taking care of the flock of God, ministering to the church. "If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things, thou shalt be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourishing up in the words of faith and of good doctrine whereunto thou hast attained." Verse 7, "But refuse profane and old wives' fables," meaning false doctrine, ideas, concepts, ideology which contradicts the revealed truth of God. And as a shepherd now, Timothy is being required to fight against the wolves who are trying to come in, let alone ones who may rise up within the very ranks of the sheepfold and start espousing false concepts and spread it to infect others. Ministry is not supposed to allow that. But it's interesting how this is used. "Refuse profane and old wives' fables and exercise thyself rather unto godliness." Personally, those ministers are supposed to practice these things that they preach, and they're all supposed to use this willingness to exert, to put themselves out in the defense of the flock. You can go to John 10, where Christ described himself as the shepherd, as compared to the hireling, the one who's willing to fight for the sheep versus the hireling who runs away. So this same idea of an intensity, of responsibility, of being willing to work, apply, and to put oneself out there absolutely applies in mind as well as in body. But refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. Verse 8, 4, and here's where we picked up. For bodily exercise profits for a little season only, in essence. But godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that is now and that is of which to come. Verse 9, this is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance. So again, the purpose of the teaching that Paul is providing here by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit is about spiritual things being more important than physical. But the physical is there as a type in order to teach us how to achieve both. So in conclusion, God made these bodies to need to move. They need exercise. We do need then a program in our mind by whatever means, through our normal activity, through accomplishing other things, or if not, through an exercise program itself, we need to move. We need to move our bodies. We need to move in our minds, likewise, to put on more of the thinking of Jesus Christ as our most important responsibility.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented the 12th message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Habitat for God and Man, given in Eugene, Oregon, September 7th, 2024.